Welcome to Of Course. We are officially over 1 month old, guys. It's wild. What better way to mark the milestone than with our guest today, Brad Stewart. I've known Brad for years, and he is one of the kindest and most genuine people I know. I wanted to have Brad on to chat about leadership through perceived failure. And we get pretty vulnerable on this one, guys. In this episode, we talk about just going for it, how we are often our biggest roadblocks, how we can truly connect with others when we drop the stories we tell ourselves, and so much more. One production note here, there were some recording issues, so the audio is just a little lower quality than usual. So on that note, let's go to the show. You're listening to Of Course, the podcast where we have conversations on leadership and sometimes other things. I'm your host, Lindsay.
So yeah, I'm super excited. Brad, why don't you kind of just give us an overview of who you are and what you're doing?
Well, thanks for having me on the show. Super excited to chat with you. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've done a lot. Yeah, the restaurant was one of the bigger ones. I'm now doing some real estate stuff. I got involved in residential real estate probably about 5 years ago. Before that, I was actually pursuing a music career for my early 20s on. And kind of during that portion of my life, I was working and training with some chefs, because whenever I was home from touring with the band and stuff, I would work in restaurants and learn how to cook and work in some coffee shops and stuff, and had a lot of different experience there. And it really kind of led me into the passion I have for food and restaurants and stuff like that.
The reason I wanted to have you on is because you're very successful now, and I know you to be, you know, this powerhouse, and everybody loves you, and you're just everyone's favorite person. But you had a unique experience with your restaurant. We like to paint with a really broad brush here and sort of cover all kinds of stories. And I really wanted to talk to you about your restaurant, how that got started and ultimately how that ended, and kind of you as a leader through that process.
Gosh, it feels like it was so long ago, but it really was. It was, so I'll tell you how I got started was back when I was in the band stuff. I met this guy, his name was Stephen Gross. He's one of my, and still is one of my best friends. And we had worked with him, who did a photo shoot for the band that I was in. And after the shoot, we kind of went out, and me and the band and him, we were just having some drinks and stuff, and really kind of hit it off and blossomed into a really lifelong friendship. And he would be down here like 6 months out of the year from Canada working on these catalog shoots. We just always had this little scratch that was like, man, we should open up a small restaurant someday. And it was just like, yeah, totally, you know? And it was like years of that going on. Yeah, maybe one day when you're done doing photography and I'm done doing music, and, you know, I was convinced I was going to make it as a rock star. So,
you know, was I at one point, so we got that in common.
Yeah. we had decent success. We had some pretty mild success, and it was getting towards just really a total lifestyle change for me, where I was just looking at my life in the band and going like, I don't know if I have it in me to kind of keep going anymore, of just like traveling and not knowing what the outcome of this is. And so him and I were kind of talking one time when he was in town, and was just like, hey, like, what if we just do it? Like, what if we just figure it out? Like, neither of us know how to open up a restaurant or a business, but the only thing we can do is try, and then we'll learn what works and what doesn't along the way. And we did. So we just kind of, he started learning how to put together a business or business proposal of like, hey, if we're going to do this, we need to get money. How do we get money? So learning all these things. And it felt like my first kind of dive into really an entrepreneurial endeavor. But it kind of wasn't in terms of like the music career I was pursuing. Like, me and those band guys like created everything ourselves. And so it didn't at that time feel like we were working, because we were just playing rock and roll music and traveling, but we did create everything that happened. So I had realized that, like, have this skill, like, let's put it to use in a different way. So we just kind of started talking, spending time together, going over ideas, creating menus. What kind of stuff do we want to do? What do we even want this to look like? Because all we know, we just wanted to have a place to hang out and eat food at, you know? But then it kind of turned into like, okay, like a coffee shop. Like, that was awesome because most of the stuff that we were, when we would get together and start figuring out how to do this, we would go to coffee shops and go to restaurants and go, well, what are they doing that we like, and not do things that we didn't like in certain restaurants and just get experiences that way. And so it finally came to, we met a guy, he was an architect, and we were just like, hey, we have this idea of like creating a restaurant, but we don't really know how to find a building or how do we like, what does that look like? And so we were like, hey, we want to hire you to kind of help design what it is that we want to do. And when he, the first, when we got there, he was like, do you guys want a third partner? And we're like, what? Because he was like, this sounds really awesome and I want in. So he worked on kind of the design plans, and that's when it really started to kind of come to life and fruition of like, holy crap, we're really doing this. Like we're, you know, we're getting some money. We're getting people interested in wanting to kind of partner with us. And that was kind of the spawn of it. And then we kind of fast forward all the other minor details, but like we opened our doors and it kind of got to the point where like we didn't even have a menu up. We had the menu done, but it wasn't like up in the restaurant, and we were still getting some chairs and stuff. And we're like, we need to open our doors because we have rent to pay. So it was kind of like a little bit of a sputter off the ground, you know, and we were just like kind of putting everything we had into it. Worked many, many hours just to kind of get everything finalized before we started. But that's when it started. So it was about October, November 2010 was kind of right when we opened our doors.
That's amazing, though. I have had several good ideas, I think are great ideas, but I've never actually, there's something about the process of raising money, of finding people to partner with, that has always been very intimidating to me. So, I mean, just, you know, I'm a little bit envious of that ability to just kind of go and do.
The first step is just doing it, right? Like we talked about it for years, and I think the fear of not knowing how to do it just kept us from doing it any sooner. And it was just like, okay, well, let's make an attempt. If we fall, if we fail, or something doesn't go right, then let's just kind of keep going. We were just both like, when it opened up, we were both just like, holy cow, we did it. We're here. You know? And that was not even, you know, opening it was in hindsight, the easier part.
Yeah.
Maintaining it and running it was far, far more difficult than we had ever imagined. But
yeah. So let's jump into that too. So you've got a restaurant now. You've magically been able to kind of put all the ingredients together and get the doors open. Mm-hmm. How did you approach hiring, staffing, getting people to sort of buy into what you guys were doing, get them in the door?
At the beginning, it was just him and I. Like we were just kind of like, we can't afford to really pay anybody yet. It was manageable for him and I to do it, and just said, you know what, like we're not going to hire anybody. We're going to get this down pat first and know exactly how this is supposed to operate. And then we can kind of go from there. That we were there 16 hours a day for probably the first entire year.
So the whole first year, it was just you and him.
It was about, I think we hired our first person 8 or 9 months. It wasn't the first entire year, but you know, even when you do hire somebody, that doesn't mean that we get to work any less. It's just like we get to, one of the things that kind of both him and I really had in common is that we loved people. Like we strived of being around people. Like we loved conversation. We loved just getting to know people. Going into the business of hospitality, like one of the most key things is finding people who like people. Like that's a big, big part of it. And that's a big part of someone's experience is being treated nicely, you know, having a good, fun environment and not just somebody who's going to ring you up and get you out. Like that was not what we wanted and had in mind for the experience of Rosenbrews. Like we knew, like we didn't really look for people that had experience in making coffee because that's a teachable thing. Like we thought we can teach you how to make coffee, but I don't know how to teach you how to be an awesome person. Like,
yeah, no, that's huge. That's huge. That's amazing to come from basically, you had been making things up, right? Mm-hmm. The band, you were making things up and figuring out as you went along, opening this place. So you were responsible and you were successful and you were getting things done. You were still, you know, you hadn't gone to school with sort of some degree in this, or, you know, you hadn't worked for years and years and years and years and years to kind of come into the situation so naive as to what things should be like. You were able to kind of come up with a formula that I think is personally, it's you could teach anyone to run a cash register, but you can't teach anyone to connect with a person and to, you know, come alongside them in whatever thing you're doing that, you know, doing with them. And I think that's really amazing. And I don't think that is you came by it naturally, but I don't think it's a very natural thing.
Even looking at it, I don't really know that it was for me, but even when we started our first kind of like interview process, like I didn't know what is it? How do you interview somebody? I've been interviewed, but it's not the same, you know? And it's like, so we're just like reading these articles of like, what you ask in the interview? And it just felt so unorganic and just not like we're interviewing for someone to be working at a corporate position. And it was just like, these are dumb questions. And so it really just kind of turned into like our interview process was like, hey, we want to just sit down and have coffee with you and have a conversation. And that seemed to work really, really well because it seemed like their guard would be let down and we weren't pressuring them or like, you know, grilling them with a flashlight in front of their face, asking them questions and like how most interviews can feel like. And we didn't have a ton of employees, but I think we just hired really awesome people and we didn't have turnover. I think 3 years that we were open, we had the same people that entire 3 years.
I mean, that's huge. I mean, the restaurant industry is notoriously difficult to keep people because the expectations are high and the hours often are cruddy and the pay isn't that great and customer service in that capacity can be really hard. And you guys are in Tempe, so I imagine you also had, I'm just assuming had college students.
Yeah, that was our biggest our draw there and most of our business. And it was kind of really smack dab right in the center of Tempe in the University of Arizona campus area. So that was a big part that attracted us. So it was just like, man, well, when school's in session and all of this foot traffic is walking around, like hopefully we're going to get a lot of people through our doors. But yeah, the location wise ended up was really great, but also kind of ended up being our demise.
Going back to the interview process just really quick, I think that something you said, like getting people to get their guards down or like let their guards down. So I typically, when I interview, I go into an interview and I'm like, okay, before we jump into your resume, like I've seen it, I love it. That's why you're here kind of thing. But who are you? Tell me about you and kind of really loosening them up. And so many times I get people, even when I tell them, like, tell me about you, they're like, I have high integrity and I am very responsible. And they just jump right into that cycle of exactly the things you think you want them to say. And I'm like, no. What do you do on the weekend? Do you have dogs? Like, tell me about those things first. And then maybe we can go in and talk about, about your high integrity,
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the question of what's your greatest weakness? It's like, I work too hard. It's like, no, that's
you know what though? And I'm a victim of that. I when I've been in interviews asked like, where's your biggest area of opportunities? And when I say stuff like, oh, I don't draw strong enough boundaries. It's like, that just sounds like such a BS answer.
Yeah. I just think people like those kind of questions, they're never easy to answer. And if you're not getting a really good organic kind of answer, you don't really know who you're talking to. Like people don't really know how to assess themselves that well. People have stories and they came from a lot of different areas and we just try to connect on that and talk about certain things. And then towards the end of it, kind of go like, well, hey, here's what we're doing. And this is what kind of is to be expected. Is that something that you sound interested in?
So when you are in that process, do you think for the interview process for you, do you go on a gut level? Like it feels good to you, so you're going to go with it? Or do you go more of like, they check off these things?
I think there was a difference maybe between Steve and I think I'm very much have more of a gut level response where he, more had a checklist of things. I think it kind of worked pretty well. We'd sometimes do like meet with somebody together or we'd be like, hey, the first few minutes you'll chat with Steve and then the second few minutes chat with me. And
yeah. So when you brought people on and you had, how long were you open?
3 years. So yeah, like I said, we opened in 2010 in November and then closed 2013 in December.
You brought people on, you were sort of building this thing and you were, 3 years, you're growing this team, whether it's growing them in number or growing them just in, skill set and who they are as people, what kind of community did you create or what was that experience like of just being new business owners, sort of in it every day with everybody? And then you have a team now of people that are in it with you. What was that like? How did you kind of build that and just sort of talk me through that?
Yeah, Steve and I, because we were on like a college campus, we wanted to connect in like what kind of organizations, what kind of things or partnerships can we make with students, really. Like, hey, what's going on campus? Where, how can we offer our restaurant as a place for them to come and do their gatherings or their meetings or that kind of stuff? And that actually worked out really well for us in the beginning. People would come and meet, you know, 20 people would come in there and the place would look packed, but only about four of them would actually buy something.
Yeah, that's the downfall of a coffee shop.
Yeah, yes. And so it did kind of work though, because a lot of times if you see a place and there's a lot of people in there, you just assume that it's good, right? Like, well, people are there. So it had an adverse effect of, you know, maybe those four people, only people that bought, but like people would start coming in because it looked like a full house. And one of the coolest things I think that we had done is we knew a guy who had a piano store. We had said, hey, what if we put your piano in our store and people can just play it? It was really cool that we had somebody, we just put a sign on it that said, yeah, like you can play this. You know, people would just come in. They had some incredible, incredible musicians come and play. And it was just really, really cool. And it's kind of fostered this, like, just do what you want here kind of a feel. Just made a lot of really good friendships and connections with people that kind of came back. And that was like one of my favorite things is you'd see, you know, Joe come and you'd have his cappuccino. Oh, okay, same thing, you know. What felt like everybody was a friend, like everyone knew each other.
Yeah, I worked at coffee shops for on and off throughout my career in different capacities, but for 6 years I worked at the same one, and it was, I truly say it's still my favorite job. Like, I'd still be there if it was financially viable or if the company was still open. They're not open anymore, but I love that environment. There's like nothing, there's nothing like it.
It's so, yeah, it's, I still love it. Whenever I go, and I still have, you know, tons of people that reach out that just go like, we miss Bros and Brews.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know? And it's so cool. It's now, it was a really hard thing when we closed, and we can get a little bit more into that here in a little bit. But I think when you fail, like you feel like a failure, you don't look at what you did as something that was awesome. You just focus on the, what fell apart kind of thing or what didn't work. And for a long time, it was just like, it was a hard conversation. You just felt like, oh, we didn't make it. But you look at it, like the statistics of somebody starting up a restaurant and the success of that restaurant usually is only about a year. And we were there for three, and like, that's awesome. And so many people are just like, do it again, do it again. And there's reasons why we close, and we can jump into that a little bit later. But it's definitely not past me. Like I said, I still have that passion for the restaurant, the hospitality style industry, and you never know. Something might change in the future.
So you're open, you've got a team, you're thriving, you're creating this amazing environment. You're there for 3 years. Let's talk about the closing. Let's, because I think that's where a lot of the meat and potatoes of our conversation is going to come from. So when did you know that was going to happen, or what was the beginning of the end?
So the building that we were in, the building didn't have any parking. So most of what we had was all foot traffic. But the first time that summer came around, we realized that, crap, there's not many kids here and not really many people here at all. There was like probably about seven or eight, not even that many, maybe four or five parking spots in the back. We had talked with the building of like, okay, well, in the summertime, when you're not using your parking garage or those parking spaces, can we use those spaces? And it was a little bit of a kind of a back and forth, and they weren't really, really willing to work with us. But at the same time, they weren't really able to stop anybody from parking anywhere. Out of the blue, I remember this like it was yesterday, they had installed a parking meter in some spaces and didn't really put clear instructions. They just put this like little tiny parking meter on the side of the building that you wouldn't even know was there unless you were told to look for it. And it was a day that was just a nightmare because people left and they walked back in our store and they're like, either my car got towed or someone stole it. And then the next person came in. They're like, yeah, where'd our car go? And I'm like, what? And so we had like half a dozen people get their cars towed.
Oh, no.
Even had that like kind of people kind of review thing, like don't park at Bros and Brews because your car's going to get towed. It really kind of killed us. And we contacted them. We were like, what? Like, why is this happening? Why were we not notified? Why was no one told? It kind of just got to the point where the building was not at all willing to work with us and try to find a solution. We had thought a lot about, okay, let's just move. You know, people, we had tons of great reviews on Yelp and people loved us and a lot of effort. And we were 3 years into it and we've kind of felt like maybe we could move to a different location and have a better of an opportunity. And we're looking at different locations and nothing really just kind of felt right. But it was also another risk. Like at some level, you're starting over in a new location and hoping that it works again. It was a really, really hard decision. And back and forth, we just had this conversation of like, do we just throw the towel in, or what do we do? You know? And it's like, it just kind of got really, really hard. And that was the hardest decision I think that either of us had to make, was to both agree, like, this is it. Maybe we got to close our doors and chalk it up as a win and a loss and just go from there. That's ultimately what we did. And it was, I will tell you this, we had this, you know, we had so much support from friends and family and all these people. And when we were closing, there were so many people that were bummed out, and we had this like going out, going away kind of party. And it was like, I'll never forget it. I actually have some video footage of like Steve and I kind of talking to a lot of people that were there, like almost like giving a speech and like thanking them and like, you know, tears in our eyes and stuff. Cause it was so cool. Like, it's just when you build and create something like that, that people enjoy communing and like just being together, like it's hard to walk away from that.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. So as you guys are navigating that and you're making that decision, were you guys always in line with each other? Or was one of you wanting to keep it open and the other one wanting to keep it closed? Or was it kind of, was it truly a communal or like a co decision and you guys were easily on the same page?
There was definitely some back and forth on that. There's so many emotions, right? There's kind of like, gosh, I'm working myself to the bone. I like sleep for 4 hours a night. And that part of you goes like, shut it down, like shut it down and get some sleep and move on to the next thing. Right. But then the part of you that started this whole process and loves it so much goes like, no, keep it going. Like there's light at the end of the tunnel. So it was a battle, and both of us had that same experience on both sides of wanting to keep going, but also like, I don't have any more strength left to like keep going, you know? And it was tough. We had a disagreement. So we had, you know, any partnerships of anything is always going to have that. But we've worked together really, really well. And like I said, to this day, we're really good friends, and we still talk about it. Like, man, don't you miss that? Yeah, I miss that. You know, that kind of
stuff. And so in this process, when you guys made the decision, how much time did you know, like how much time did you have to stay open knowing you were going to close?
It was probably, I want to say 2 or 3 months.
Okay. So did you let your team in on that? Like, did they know what was happening?
We did. Because you know, they at some level loved it like we did, not the way that we did, but mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. hey, this is what's happening and it's super hard. And there was some hard stuff because towards the end, we were having to figure out how to pay everybody and like pay some of our bills and those kind of things, as it was, you know, and that's a hard thing because people, you never want to not pay somebody, and we want to make sure that you're taken care of. And we're trying to figure out how to do that. And for a while, I mean, for the last while, Steve and I didn't take any money from it. We were just making sure that we were taking care of the people that were helping us get some stuff done. But we let them in, and it was definitely tough. You know, for them, it was just like, oh, we'll just find another job. And for us, it was just like, well, this is our baby.
Yeah. You know? So did they stay with you till the end?
Yeah, a couple of them did. We wanted to tell people early enough because we didn't want to go like, well, we're closed after today, so go find a job. Like, we want to let them know, like, you go look for something here sometime. Stay the whole time, or if you find something else, then you can go. You know, respect, because these people poured a lot of time and effort into our business, you know, and we respected that. Kind of one of my, like, the biggest leadership quality that will always rain on me is lead by example. That to me is like, you know, I wouldn't ask you to do something that I wouldn't do myself. And I've been in plenty of situations where that's not the case, right? It's like somebody is kind of on the hilltop, just living the life where I'm, you know, busting my butt to get things done. And it's hard to rally behind that. And I know that to be true. And so like, that was one of the things, like Steve and I can't tell you how many days off we took in that 3 years, but it wasn't many, right? Like we were always there and putting in just as many hours, more hours than we were asking anybody else to do. And I think that really, they respected us for that. That I'll always be that way. But to me, the only really kind of true best guaranteed leadership is somebody, like, it goes back to the king on the battlefield versus the king in the throne. Hey, when you're fighting a war, where's your king? That has always kind of just been one of the pinnacles or pillars of what leadership means to me.
Yeah. And that is huge. I think certain things come up, right? I'm noticing certain patterns, but they play out in different ways. So I think the sacrifice that you make as an individual, if you are whether it's your company or it's not your company, but you are the leader of the company, so ultimately you're responsible. I think the level of sacrifice and ownership and how you show up completely informs how the rest of your team shows up. And it's pretty incredible, because I think everyone has known someone who, like you said, someone's on the hilltop, right? Like they take for themselves first and then give part of whatever's left to you. And I don't think, like you said, that's not a way to inspire. I mean, there's that, that book that just came out that's, Leaders Eat Last, the concept of that, right? Like just even from the title alone is exactly what you're talking about. Like you're not taking paychecks, you're not sleeping, you're not taking days off. You're putting everything you have into that place. Plus you're a really good person, right? And you've created an environment that people like. So you're kind of, no, but that's not sustainable, right? Like that's not advice I would give, like drain who you are into this so that your people know how to show up. But the fact that you did that is why people would show up.
Yeah. So give all of yourself to the thing that you're doing, and so will everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the beauty of that, right, is if you don't have a weird parking situation or weird landlord, or, you don't have these other things that come in to it, that's the initial makeup of, everyone's mutually giving everything for a mutual goal, and everyone's sort of you're shoulder to shoulder with your team, right? You're not looking down on them, asking them to do things. You are shoulder to shoulder with them. And that's how you build something really incredible.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm making the sandwiches, I'm not just telling you to do it and cracking the whip. It's like, I'm here too. And it was part of I loved doing that. I loved being in the thick of it. Do we want to eventually get to a point where you can kind of manage things and grow your business? Absolutely. But, both of us got into it because we loved working in it. Like that was what we really were passionate about.
So now kind of just going through the story, your team knows you're closing the doors. Like how did the relationships end there? Are you still in contact with them, or what was that like?
Yeah, it's really kind of cool. Like none of this was done in part by me or Steve or our business, but two of our kind of previous employees have done really, really well for themselves. Her name is Jessie Snyder. She started kind of baking, and she was one of our employees and said, "Hey, can I make cookies and stuff?" We were ordering in cookies and baked goods from a different bakery, but she was like, "I'm really good at this. Can I make this stuff here and sell it?" And so we were like, "Sure, make some stuff." And we were both like, "Holy cow, this is incredible." She was so good at it. And now as really super successful and like has her own cookbook and all these kind of things. And, which was really, really great. And then one of our other employees who was a barista that worked for us for a while, she has her own store, a tea store now called Teespressa in Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah. Allison Devon. Yeah. She worked with us for, I want to say a year and a half, maybe 2 years, towards the latter half of the Bros and Brews endeavor. But yeah, she was with us for a while, and then she went on Shark Tank.
She was on Shark Tank.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's doing really well, super successful as well. So it's cool to see that, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. And then also, that just goes back to show you when you're the place you're hiring from, right? Where you want to hire good people and you kind of come from that. Yeah, they can do the function, but also we like them on a guttural level. I mean, look at that's you can't get better proof than that, right? They've gone on to be, they're driven, they're passionate, they're committed. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and super encouraging to them too. It's like I said, I had no part in any of that kind of stuff. I got the opportunity to work with them for a while, which is kind of cool. And then you see that happen, and it's kind of like, man, that's awesome. Like you totally encourage them. Like one I will never forget this, and it was pre Bros and Brews opening, is I actually worked at an Apple store for a little while. And I don't know if you have ever worked in an Apple store or know anybody who has or tried it, or it is not an easy job to get. And it's a very rigorous, lengthy interview process. And I remember them asking me why I wanted to work at Apple and what my dreams and goals were. And I said, I love the products, but actually my aspiration and dreams I have is to open up a coffee shop. And the day that I got hired, the guy that interviewed me told me the reason they hired me is because they loved that I had the ambition to go and do something for my own, and they wanted to maybe help me get there. I'll never forget it. I was like, man, that is really freaking cool.
Well, that's crazy. That's something that actually when I talked to Lizzie on the podcast, we were talking about, you know, she said one of the biggest, the things that makes her the happiest and gives her the, you know, most fulfillment in her job is the personal development of her employees. And, you know, someone starting a side hustle, someone pays off their car, you know, I like to be a step in the process, whatever step that is. And that's something, you know, again, I think is really, really rare. It's, you know, you don't need to sign over your firstborn, you know, it shouldn't be a blood oath to work somewhere. And I think if someone's making you take a blood oath, then maybe, you know, maybe there's a reason, right? There's a reason that they're that concerned.
Totally. Yeah. It's, I mean, doing real estate now in Arizona, I work a lot with, do still work a lot with Lizzie, and she's awesome. Her people will die for her. Like, they just will. And like, it's because she works so hard and is in the thick of it all the time with them.
Yeah, she's the best. So let's talk about the failure piece here. Mm-hmm. I know it's the F word. It's a tough word, because it's such a, it can mean so many different things. And I think we can take it on maybe, when we don't even need to.
Yeah.
Right. Something feels like a failure that, like you said earlier, isn't actually a failure.
Right.
And I think sometimes we can think, oh, this thing failed, so it negates that whole experience, which it absolutely doesn't. So when your doors closed and you got all your stuff out of there, like where were you at? Like where mentally, emotionally, what was that like for you?
It was hard. So but one of the things I didn't say during this process was Steve and I actually lived together.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. We lived together. We worked together. We literally were attached at the hip every single day for those 3 years, pretty much. And
wait, can we pause really quick?
Yeah.
The fact that you guys are still very close friends also shows what kind of people you are, though.
Yeah, totally. And it's that those situations are not easy, you know. And so many times you hear of people like, "Oh, yeah, even situations of like, oh, I rented my house to my friend and they didn't take care of it and we're not friends anymore." You know, it's like kind of the thing, like those kind of things. But yeah, it was tough and it was trying, you know, for both of us. And we still totally love each other, respect each other, and talk about that experience often. In fact, I'm going on a trip with him and some other friends in about 2 days.
There you go.
the hardest thing for me was that Steve was from Canada, and the only reason that he was able to be here was because he had a work visa for the business that we own. So when that business dissolved, he was no longer allowed to be in Arizona.
Oh.
So that was a big, big hurt for both of us and our friends and our community, because they were like, man, this sucks. We're losing Rosenbrews, but we're also losing Steve. You know, it's like that was probably one of the harder things to kind of get over. Like, whatever, the business is whatever, but like when you're friend and brother basically is not allowed to be here anymore. But yeah, that was probably the hardest thing to do. And then I, you know, of course had to figure out, okay, I need a job now, you know, and it was like, I don't even know what I want to do. Like, it's just hard to, you kind of feel like you're starting over your life, you know, like, where do I go? I don't know. Like, what am I going to do? I have no idea.
Well, and you too, like I'm imagining, you know, for when you're in the thick of Rosenbrews, right, you're not thinking, well, when this ends, I'm going to go do this. Like you did, that was your future. And you're thinking about how to expand that and how to grow that. So how did you recalibrate when when your future was completely redirected?
Really good question. I think at some level it was just kind of like, okay, I can't do nothing. So let me just get a job to pay the bills and then try to figure that out. Right. Like, and we owed money. We borrowed a lot of money from family and had to pay them back, you know? And it was like that, we weren't off the hook yet. You know, it was just like, we had other obligations to fulfill. And so it was kind of like, all right, well, you got knocked down and I was a little slow to get up. You're just trying to figure out what it is you want to do. And I was like, well, let me just get a job. And I ended up getting a job with a friend, that started a company that was a kind of a fundraising organization and taught leadership in elementary schools. And it was really, really cool. And that was kind of like the stepping stone. I actually did that. I was supposed to only be a little bit, but I was there for almost 3 years. It was It was really, really great. And I'd love the mission of what we were doing. And we were working, you know, helping kids like understand what good leadership is and like how to tell kids that they're important and that they matter and what they do and what they say matters. And like really kind of cool. I learned a lot about leadership there too.
Oh man, that's a whole other conversation we can have.
Not to get into a rabbit hole, but yeah, that's kind of where I was for a while.
So really quickly, when you're in that, just out of curiosity, when you're in that position, right, where you're, it's your total career switch, you've taken a hard left or hard right, however you want to look at it. And you're in a position now where you are a superhero to these kids and you're teaching them about leadership and, you know, you're coming, it's really totally different than what you were doing, but that taps into sort of some similar things maybe in you. How did that feel when you were doing that, but from at a, maybe a place of like, maybe not your personal best, right? I don't imagine the resilience was, oh, I got this job over here where I'm inspiring kids. I feel great immediately. Was there a lag time where you had to maybe inspire these kids when you were in the best place yourself?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that partly the reason that I stayed there so long was because I kind of like really just masked all of the sadness of closing Bros and Brews with like, these kids really are expecting me to show up and be awesome, you know? So it felt really good to kind of like, hey, I went through some hard stuff and some failures, but like, that doesn't matter to them. They don't care. Like kind of restaurant that I had to close. So it's going to be cool. And so it was, and I think I stayed there for a long time because it just kind of gave me the out to not really have to think about what I was going to do next. I knew that what I was doing with the school stuff was great, but it was going to be the end all be all.
Yeah.
And I don't know the kind of person I am. I don't know that there is that. I want to do 1,000 things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was kind of cool. And it did help me a lot, like kind of through that of like,
yeah,
you know, I was encouraged and learned a lot from these kids kind of more than I taught them probably.
Yeah. What would that be like? What would you say would be like the top couple things you learned from that experience?
That things are just things, right? Like those kids, like they don't have a business and they don't have those kinds of experiences yet. And so they have a different way of being able to just kind of go like, oh, that sucks, you know, and just move on, you know, like there's no like real, you're not stuck in something. And it was just kind of cool. Like going back to the mindset of being a kid, just live for the day.
Oh, that's awesome. So when you're, you know, kind of wrapping up sort of that whole experience and going through, I mean, cause it's not small. Like it's funny cause it sounds like, oh, we had a restaurant for 3 years and then we moved on. But the emotional and financial and physical and mental, you know, experience that was, is not small. And that's not, when people go through, it's like if someone goes through a bankruptcy or if someone goes through a divorce, like those are, in hindsight, yes, it was a thing and it's now, you know, you've moved on, but it does take a toll on you. So as a person now, as Brad now, who's loving what he does and is very successful and is in this different phase of his life, do you think there's still some sort of residual stuff that sticks around from that period of like maybe fear of failure or, you know, kind of anything?
Yeah. Like I think I had, when I was alluding to before, like it was a hard conversation at first. Like people would be like, I never wanted people to be like, hey, so what happened with Bros and Brews? Like I hated that question because I had to answer it.
Yeah. It feels like a bruise, right? It's like,
yeah. And it was just like, and I would find myself like trying to think of all the kind of cool ways to answer it to make it sound like it wasn't, you know, it didn't end, you know, I don't know. It was just like trying to manipulate the answer to some, and it finally just got like, that was so tiring to going just like, you know what? Like we did it for 3 years and it kind of got to the point where the answer was like, it started to not feel like a failure. And I was like convincing myself of this as well. I'm like, no, we didn't fail. Like we did something for 3 years and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it wasn't there anymore, you know? So it was just like away from the failure side of it. And it's also kind of helped me because, you know, that was not that long ago. We closed 6 years ago, but I've at some level feel so much older, maybe a little bit wiser of like the experiences that I had and can like look at them and really learn and grow from them. That was the hardest thing I have ever done,
mm-hmm.
was manage and operate a restaurant for 3 years. Like that, well, hands down to this day was the most difficult thing ever, but I learned so freaking much.
Yeah.
I learned what it means to like grind your teeth out and like work so hard for something that you love, and that whatever you want to do, you can do it. That was like one of those, that quote, like whether you say you can or you can't, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I learned that, and it was like, I learned how to overcome a lot of fear opening up that restaurant and doing it, going like, okay, great. Well, if it, like, we got to where we wanted to get, and did it end? Yeah, sure. But does that mean that was labeled by that? No. You know, I, like I said, I have aspirations. Like, that's not left me. Like, there's still something in my body that says, like, do it again, you know, someday. Yeah. It's like the Thomas Edison quote of, like, the only sure way to failure is to quit. And, like, the only real measure of the way to get success is to try again. It blows my mind to this day the amount of times I have a conversation about Bros and Brews. Like, it's 6 years later, still like a topic of conversation with people. I feel like it's maybe God's way or the universe's way of like saying, hey, it's not done, you know, it's not over yet.
Well, one thing I did want to touch base on, or touch, kind of circle back to, that you said that I thought was really interesting, where you said there was a period of time where you were really trying to deliver the message that you guys closed in a way that felt sort of more palatable or more acceptable, easier. It was easier to sort of either give it, or you thought it easier for people to hear it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone through a similar season of trying things and trying to figure them out and really being stretched and pulled. And I am someone who I can be very transparent on one level, right? On one hand, I can be very, very vulnerable, transparent, and just, I'll let you know what's going on, but I'll give it to you in a way that is still manicured, or it's given a polish, right? And I didn't have it in me to keep that energy up this last season. And so I would be having conversations with people that were just so raw and that were so vulnerable and just, hey, here's where I'm at and this is how it feels, and it's all uncomfortable, and it, or it's all challenging, or I actually don't know what I'm doing, or whatever, just like kind of stripping away all of that garbage. And what I found in that moment was the way that people were able to show up for me. So I wasn't, and on an emotional level mostly, but I wasn't giving people an opportunity to connect with me because I wasn't connecting with them, right? So I was getting to that point of I could only connect because I didn't have any energy in me. And the kinds of conversations and connections that came out of that were amazing. I was allowing people the space to hear me and just understand what I'm going through and then show up for me in whichever way they wanted to. And so I think that's really interesting when you say, you know, oh, it's still 6 years and we're still talking about Bros and Brews. And though you maybe had stretches of time where you felt it was an uncomfortable topic, I think the fact that you could be vulnerable and you would allow for that space in does allow it to be something that still people can still connect with you on, because it's a very real thing that you went through and people saw you go through and right. experienced with you.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that the way I was perceiving people asking me that question was incorrect. Like, people aren't, you would think that, oh, tell me about Bros and Brews, because they want to know that tell me how you fail. Like, that's how you hear that question, right? Tell me how you succeed. And that's not what's being asked. And I learned that kind of after going through it so many times of like, no, people just wanted to know the story. They're intrigued by it and know like what I learned from it. It's just kind of getting to that point, like you said, of just being vulnerable and sharing that experience. Because you don't, in it, you're thinking that if you're going to talk about it, that you're basically admitting to failure. And if that's not the case, like you're sharing an experience.
And it's something too, like we get in those mental sort of spaces, there's like mental traps, right? Where it's like, you can't say this, you can't say that, cause you can't feel good. But at the end of the day, like everybody has those versions of that, right? It may not be a Bros and Brews, or it may not be something I've gone through specifically, but you've got people that, you know, struggle with infertility, or that you got a parking ticket that morning, or whatever it is, you know, there's something in their life that they have that feeling, and you don't, you know, and how do you approach them? Well, you don't judge them for it, or you're not asking to be gossipy or nosy. Like, you care for people. So to understand that care is coming back at you.
Right.
Because I can get very defensive, and I can get very, they're trying to rub my nose in my failure. How I feel.
Right.
Learning that actually, no.
That's not happening. Yeah.
That actually isn't what's happening. So, well, thank you so much for coming on and having this, you know, vulnerable conversation. It's not an easy thing to come on and say, hey, let's talk about my business I had for 3 years that I don't have now. But I think what we learned through this whole conversation is that it's not just about that. It's about so much more. And you know, there's so much more to the story and there's so much more in your future. And if you ever do something again, I know, you know, a lot of good bakers, but I would happily throw my hat in the ring. but yeah, do you want to end on, like, give us like an inspiring note? You threw out a couple good quotes, you threw out a couple good things, but just sort of like, you could sum up sort of your journey and your experience with all of this. What would you say?
Oh, that's a good one. I think that Thomas Edison quote of just, you know, the only sure way to failure is to quit. Like, and the only way to succeed is to try again. Like, that is just rang so true, because it's a very, very simple answer to such big, big questions. That goes back to the beginning of opening up Rosen Brews. Like, neither of us had any idea how to open up a business and to start that business. And that's such a big frog to eat, you know? Like, it's so easy to go just kick it down the road or just get a job and keep dreaming about it, right? And it was just like, it was reminded me that just put forth the effort. And if it doesn't happen as soon as you want it to, you have learned something to get you closer to doing. The only thing in anybody's way is themselves, for the most part.
So it's that persistence thing, right? Like, the difference between, you know, Kobe Bryant and then all the other basketball players is that he just, I don't know why I picked Kobe Bryant. There's other people. But, you know, basically that he just kept going. Yeah, there's some talent there, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely, there's talent. But he just kept going. I'm sure he was told no. I'm sure he was told no, maybe even in the beginning, more than he was told yes.
Yeah.
Or whomever else you want to put in there. It doesn't matter, you know? Yeah. Well, that's amazing, Brad.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I love chatting with you. This is awesome.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to Of Course, the podcast where we have conversations on leadership and sometimes other things. I'm your host, Lindsay.